Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay and looking forward to the bank holiday weekend. The first of three in May, would you believe? Well, it is Friday, April the 28th. And our top story today is that a report has found the Met Police could be missing murders because they still haven't learned lessons after mistakes in catching serial killer Stephen Port. You may remember he's the man serving a life sentence for drugging and killing four men, including 21-year-old Daniel Whitworth, who was from Gravesend. His Majesty's Inspector of Constabulary, Matt Parr, says history could repeat itself.
It could happen again. I think still the way that the Met deal with unexpected deaths is far too slack. It's not professional enough. They make too many mistakes. And because of the volume of unexpected deaths they're dealing with, it's impossible to be able to say that they're not missing murders. And categorising them as non-suspicious in the way that they did back in 2014 and 2015. We all expect police officers to have an instinct for when things don't look right, don't seem right, and if in any doubt, to do some investigation to satisfy themselves that what they think they're seeing is really happening. Well, they didn't do that in 2014, 2015 at all, and we're still hearing from people in the Met and the evidence that we picked up during this inspection that there's still officers who don't display that curiosity, that instinct for when something's not right. So they're too ready to write off deaths. And the Met get called to a lot of deaths, probably about 30 a day, 10,000 over a year. But they need to do better investigations when they turn up. There's quite a lot of inexperience. I think out on those front lines, the officers that you'll see in London in police cars turning up to crimes, about 25% of them have only been in the Met for a year or two. So there's a lot of inexperience. They're not as well supervised as they ought to be. So sometimes you've got people that don't really know how they're supposed to investigate a death, not being supervised by people that should be there to take them through the process. Not going back to what happened in 2014, that case is well documented and a lot of people know a lot of the details. But even now, we had cases where evidence was found on people that had died in the mortuary, not by the police officers that turned up. So drugs in someone's pocket, or they wouldn't look in a house and take meaningful statements from the people that lived there or who'd reported the death. So if they get the basics wrong right at the start, the chances of categorising the death wrongly and therefore the danger of something like Stephen Port happened again goes up. In Stephen Port, it wasn't just that each individual death didn't get a proper investigation. They didn't join the dots and see the obvious similarities between the four victims. So what we're still hearing, though, is if there are connections between deaths, the Met only rely on luck sometimes to join the dots. So it might be that the same officer goes to two deaths and recognises the similarity. There isn't a sort of an analysis process and a sharing of intelligence across the Met about deaths that have occurred that would enable them to spot the patterns. There is, as you know, new leadership in the Met. I think there has been a change in attitude, less defensive than in the past, more willing to acknowledge the mistakes. And I think I'm quite optimistic about the intent of the current leadership to put things right. But I think we all need to recognise it's going to be a long road.
Well, the Met's new commissioner, Sir Mark Rowley, insists he's committed to getting the basics right.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories for you today, and a sex offender from Medway and a woman who helped him to target young children have been jailed. Tristan Goodwin paid Angel Fuller to arrange meetings with victims over an 8-month period. The pair, who are aged 24 and 19 and from Edinburgh Road and Churchill Avenue in Chatham, have been locked up for a total of 13 years. Armed police have been called to Strood following reports of a man with a gun. Officers searched a property on Darnley Road yesterday and found an imitation firearm. An 18-year-old man was arrested but has since been released without charge. Next today, and there are calls for immediate action to improve conditions at a young offender institution in Kent after an inspection found a quarter of boys in solitary confinement. Cookham Wood was was visited earlier this month, and a damning report out today has revealed how two teenagers have been kept on their own for more than 100 days. Those being held there also revealed they felt unsafe and were resorting to carrying weapons. Well, I've been speaking to Charlie Taylor, who is His Majesty's Chief Inspector of Prisons.
What we found was some really shocking levels of violence. We found that more than 200 weapons had been found in recent months. And most concerning of all, we found that a third of the boys were being segregated when we inspected, including two of them who'd been locked up behind their doors for more than 100 days in conditions that were really akin to solitary confinement.
And what have you said to government about this? Because you've kind of flagged this up as being really something that needs to be tackled incredibly urgently.
Absolutely. We want to see some urgent action here. They need to do much more for these boys who they're locking in solitary confinement. They shouldn't be. That's not the way to manage behaviour. They should be out of their cells. They should be back in education. But unfortunately, they don't have enough officers on the wings, but they do have more than 450 staff. So the way that resource is being used in the prison is very strange. There are 23 senior leaders at Cook and Wood for only 77 boys. And yet we're seeing high levels of violence. We're seeing staff who are nervous of the boys. They're backing off. They're exhausted because of what they've been having to deal with. And we're also seeing very poor education provision. So the first thing that needs to happen at Cook and Wood is they need to begin to reduce the levels of violence. Because if boys aren't safe, if staff aren't safe, then there's no chance of them being able to get into education and actually learn anything. So the first job is to make the place safer. The second job is to reduce these astonishing numbers of solitary confinement. And the third thing is to build up the confidence of the existing staff in order that they are able to manage and support what are at times a very challenging group of boys, and to give them the support they need in order that they can make some progress and not reoffend when they come out.
Those that were being kept in solitary confinement, did they give you any idea as to how it was affecting them and kind of what impact it was having, particularly on their mental health?
We came across boys who were being locked up for 23 and a half hours a day. They were having barely any human interaction. And the word solitary confinement isn't something we normally use. We normally talk about segregation, because solitary confinement is very particular. It's where you're not getting that human interaction, where you're locked up for very long periods of time. Some of them weren't even getting out into the exercise yards for days on end. And that has an enormous detrimental effect on their mental health. And we came across boys who were depressed, who were fed up, and who just felt completely bleak and helpless.
We can also get reaction now from Andrew Neilson. He's from the Howard League for Penal Reform, which calls for reform in the youth justice system.
I'm afraid to say it's not a huge surprise to the Howard League. We are a charity that runs a free and confidential legal advice line to young people in custody, and Cook and Wood is one of the prisons that advice line operates in. And we were certainly aware of some of the concerns that the inspector has raised in his letter to the Secretary of State.
One thing that's flagged up quite early on in this letter is the fact that children were being kept in isolation. I think they reported on two boys who'd been kept in isolation for more than 100 days. What sort of impact would that have on a young person?
I mean, this is the most shocking aspect of the report, and it's particularly of concern to us at the Howard League, because we have previously taken legal action around similar treatment of boys in another young offenders institution, Feltham in West London. And that was some years ago now, but here we are in 2023. And as you say, a quarter of the boys being held in a situation which is tantamount to solitary confinement. Those two boys that were held for more than 100 days, I mean, what does that do? Well, it means they're having very limited education. They're not out of their cells doing any physical exercise. You know, the whole point of a child being in Cook and Wood is that they have committed a crime, and the hope would be that when they are released, they are less likely to commit a crime. But if they are having no positive activities, if they are simply lying on their bunks all day doing nothing, and whatever the issues that led them to commit crime, be that substance misuse, poor mental health, histories of neglect and abuse, which we often sadly find when we're talking about children under the age of 18 in custody, if none of that's being addressed, then how on earth are they going to be less likely to commit crime on release? If anything, they may be more likely to reoffend.
Well, the prison's minister, Damien Hines, has sent us this statement. It says, Cookenwood is home to some of society's most troubled children, many with violent convictions. But the situation there is completely unacceptable, and it is preventing us from helping these young offenders turn their backs on crime. That is why we have already appointed a new governor to provide stronger leadership and started a review into how children were being separated to prevent violence. But it is clear further action is needed so we can ensure these children receive the support they need.
Kent Online reports.
More than 10 children are among the latest group of asylum seekers to arrive in Kent on small boats. At least 60 people are thought to have crossed the Channel yesterday, with some brought ashore at Dungeness on a lifeboat. The government insists their controversial new bill will help tackle the issue, but campaigners say it won't stop refugees making the dangerous journey. Police are hunting a man who sexually assaulted a teenage boy on a bus in Chatham. He was travelling on the Arriva 145 service last Thursday, when he was approached by a suspect described as being white and aged in his 40s. Officers were also keen to speak to a woman who intervened and helped the victim. This is one of our most read stories on the website today. A Ramsgate mum has called out people who posted insensitive comments on Facebook after her baby son was flown to hospital by air ambulance. Now, the one-month-old had stopped breathing and had to be taken to London for urgent care. Charlie Evans says it was made even worse by people on a residence group making jokes. You can read that article and let us know your thoughts today at Kent Online. Now, we're being urged to take our cyber safety seriously as part of Stalking Awareness Week. A charity set up following the death of Claire Burnell from Tunbridge Wells, who was killed by her stalker ex, is urging young people in particular to know the signs. They include things like unwanted contact or being followed. This week, police in Kent have arrested 24 people for stalking and harassment offences. Well, I've been speaking to Jan Berry from Protection Against Stalking and started by asking for her reaction to those figures.
Well, I'm really pleased that they've arrested 24 people for stalking. It's important that victims know that they're going to be listened to and that something proactive is going to happen that will protect them. So I think that's good news.
And can you tell us a bit about the work that you're doing? What are you wanting to highlight in particular this week?
It's really important that people know what stalking is and what it isn't. We know that early identification of stalking saves lives. And this week in particular, we're focusing on the effect it's having on young people. And we know that very often they don't understand what is happening to them is stalking. And because of that, they don't understand the risk that they are facing. So thank you for highlighting it. But stalking is an insidious crime. It's a psychological crime. Over 80% of people who are victims of stalking will experience some form of PTSD. So it's really important if we can catch it early, if we can nip it in the bud, then we can protect and prevent some of that harm. Having this week and people maybe just thinking about it for a while, not only might they be the victims, but they might know the victim of stalking. And by being able to recognise the signs, that fixation, that obsession, the amount of time that a stalker will spend on their behaviour. It doesn't take, you know, a minute to send a text. It doesn't take 10 seconds to make a phone call. But when you're making hundreds and hundreds of those every single day, that's a huge investment of time. And that starts to demonstrate the fixation and the obsession.
You mentioned there about young people in particular and how they might not recognise the signs. Has technology played a part in this? Because as you mentioned there, keeping in touch with people is so much easier than it ever used to be. We've got the various different apps that young people can use. Does that become a hindrance in a way that it's so much easier for people to make contact?
It can be a hindrance. And there's no doubt that I think most of our cases of stalking will have elements of cyber stalking. So there'll be some online, whether it's through apps, whether it's through emails, depending on the complexity of it, it will have a different. Normally, the stalker is either trying to stay close to somebody, or they're trying to follow them and undertake some form of surveillance. And so, you know, we'd be looking at tracking devices, and we'd be looking at how good your privacy settings are. And I know people keep banging on about it, but it's really good. It's called digital hygiene. Every single one of us, you know, we're speaking on a Zoom call at the moment, and every single one of us has got a digital footprint. And it's important that we know what we're leaving behind on the internet, and that we just think about the information about ourselves that we're giving. Everything that goes onto the internet stays on the internet. And it's important we remember that.
Since stalking protection orders were introduced 3 years ago, 112 have been obtained in Kent. That's more than anywhere else outside of London. Well, if you do need support, you can speak to the National Stalking Helpline. Their number is 0808 802 0300. That's 0808 802 0300.
Kent Online reports.
Maternity services at Kent's biggest hospital have been praised by inspectors. The Care Quality Commission has rated the department at Medway Maritime good, saying it was safe and well led, with staff focused on the needs of mums-to-be. However, they did find there were some shortages of workers due to sickness and recruitment issues. The MP for Dartford is calling for traffic cameras to be used to catch people who are littering. Gareth Johnson says he's sick of driving down the A2 and seeing rubbish on the side of the road. He reckons the technology should be used to identify those responsible and issue fines. I'd like to know what you think about that idea. You can comment on the stories or via our socials. Now, traders in part of Ashford say a decision to close a town centre car park will have a detrimental effect on their businesses. Park Mel car park has been shut for maintenance work until further notice, with council bosses saying it's impossible to say when it'll reopen. Well, Vince Monticelli runs a record shop nearby, and Katie Ramsden is also a local trader. They've been giving us their thoughts.
Yeah, just finding the news that the car park is closed again, which is of course of extreme disappointment. We haven't got it open across all floors yet, and they've closed the ground floor again. I didn't get any notification on that, so it's a bit of a surprise to actually find out through just people coming in and talking about, asking me questions as to why it's shut. So, yeah, once again, left in the dark.
Has it affected your business by any means yet? Or
We had our biggest day of the year on Saturday, which is Record Store Day, which is a massive day for independent record shops. Most people were reporting that those figures were up. I think we stayed about the same. So, yeah, it's had an impact, obviously. If people can't get here, they think they also closed the motorway at the weekend as well, so just to add to our woes. So, yeah, it definitely has an impact on business. It always does.
How has the car park being closed affected you?
I mean, it's too soon to tell, I think, so far, because it's only since, what, Thursday evening? Was it Friday? It's been a quiet day generally, but I know that from last time it was closed for a significant period, and that was hard, you know? It has been slightly better since it's been reopened, so, you know, I'm sort of anticipating more of the same, and it doesn't feel like fixing it is going to be prioritised, which is disappointing. Like, you know, maybe they'll surprise me, but it doesn't feel like it's going to be a priority. It just feels like they're going to let it fester. And even when it's been open, there's been antisocial behaviour sort of around there. I opened my back door the other day because I heard loads of noise, and there were some kids out there, like, sitting directly on the wall, blaring out music, like, round the back. And I just, like, you know, rolled my eyes and slammed the door shut again, because, oh, for goodness sake. And then they just started kicking a ball against my door. I'm like, oh, great. It did stop fairly quickly after that. But yeah, so it's like, if it's shut, it just becomes a breeding ground for trouble, really, which it shouldn't be. It should be a car park that people can use.
Ashford Borough Council has apologised for the inconvenience. Controversial plans for dozens of flats opposite a railway station in North Kent have been approved. The council had objected to the idea of 3 4-storey buildings on Station Road in Greenhithe, but it's been overturned by the National Inspectorate. We're told the development will include parking and a new access road. Meantime, homes are going to be built on the site of a former gasworks in Broadstairs. Plans for 65 properties on the old British gas site site in North Down Road have been given the go-ahead, despite fears over an increase in traffic. Developers say it'll improve the appearance of the area.
Kent Online News.
Bosses at a North Kent company who feared they were one flood away from going under are now confident their future is secure. If you're a regular listener of the podcast, you may have heard that over the past 5 years, staff at Dartford Composites were regularly having to clear water every time it rained. Well, now the Environment Agency has cleared waterways around the business park they're based on and provided the company with a pump as well. Co-owner Ruth Sylvester hopes the future is looking a lot drier.
It's been challenging, but it's not just been challenging for us. It's been challenging for all the companies on Ness Road, all the companies on the Darrenth. So you're talking about close on 100 businesses that have been impacted by this. As I said to you earlier, the big issue we have is we're the lowest point. So by being the lowest point, that means everything comes to us. And unfortunately, that means it's makes it a harder job in terms of cleanup. It's going to be 6 months to 12 months before we dry out enough that we can redo the offices. And it's not a nice environment to work in. It's not nice to bring customers in either, but we've got a brilliant team that are working really hard and doing their best, and it's about doing our best as well, not just now, but also we worked all the way through COVID because we're seen as key workers for the industry.
And what was it used to be like when you were watching the weather, thinking if it's going to rain?
We have CCTV, so the first thing you do is log onto the cameras, and if you can't get onto the cameras, then you know straight away that it's already too bad, to be perfectly honest. But it's usually a case of log on, make sure we're around in Kent on weekends, and it's a case of come down, see what you can do. And even if it's only just minimal to keep the water sort of at a lower level, it's doing everything you can on that side.
So anytime it rained, you were worried?
Yes. Anytime it rains, you still worry now, to be perfectly honest. You still log on every now and again just to check. But as I said, the work the Environment Agency has done has been incredible. They've cleared 18 years worth of blockages on the ditches to the Thames. They've given us a pump, which not just helps us, but as I say, helps all the businesses in the area. And that enables all these companies to function. So you're talking hundreds of jobs across the board, although we've been the key driver to try and move things along purely because of the net being hit the worst.
The Kent Wildlife Trust have set out new plans to make the county more resilient to climate change. They want to use more land for conservation and wilding projects while restoring natural habitats. The charity aims to increase wildlife abundance and climate resilience across 30% of Kent's land and sea by 2030. And the Bishop of Dover has been given an important role for the coronation. The Right Reverend Rose Hudson-Wilkin will be presenting the Queen Consort's rod during the ceremony next weekend. The Archbishop of Canterbury is performing the official crowning of both King Charles and Camilla.
Kent Online reports.
Now, with details on everything going on in Kent this bank holiday weekend, here's Sam Laurie.
It feels like we've been waiting for May's string of bank holiday weekends for a while, and now the first one is finally here, and it certainly isn't short of things to do. We have, of course, got a full guide of everything happening in the county over the May Day weekend up on Kent Online and in this week's paper. But just to give you a taste of what's going on, I'll pick a few of my favourites. On Sunday, Dreamland in Margate is throwing a special one-off dog day, which will see the vintage fairground filled with four-legged friends. There'll be agility courses, training classes, competition prizes, dog-friendly ice cream, and lots of adorable animals. Kent Life, just outside of Maidstone, will have its very own maypole for visitors to dance around, and an old-fashioned steam organ from Saturday until Monday, as well as the usual farmyard activities including animal encounters, paddle boats and shows in the Big Top. And this bank holiday, Rochester's annual Sweeps Festival returns to the town for a full weekend of folk music, Morris dancing, Kentish food and drink and family fun. There will also be stalls, funfair rides and workshops held in the gardens of Rochester Castle and live music on pop-up stages and in pubs all over town. If you were hoping to catch a show this weekend, don't worry, I have got some great suggestions for you. The English touring opera company is bringing two of the world's most celebrated operas to the Marlowe Theatre in Canterbury on Friday and Saturday. The productions are set to be truly breathtaking, and there's a free pre-show talk for ticket holders before each performance that you definitely don't want to miss. For music lovers, the Maidstone Fringe Festival is in full swing until Monday, with more than 40 artists from a variety of genres set to perform at arts venues all over the county town. You can book tickets to some of the concerts online, but there are also lots of places where you can simply walk in and enjoy the music for free. And last but certainly not least, fans of Strictly Come Dancing will want to book their tickets to see Annie the Musical at the Orchard Theatre in Dartford, which opens on Monday. The show stars Craig Revel Horwood, Strictly's panto villain judge, as Miss Hannigan in the much-loved Family Musical. Well, what a way to kick off the new month! We're waving goodbye to April and saying hello to May with music festivals, theatre and family days out. I mean, what more could you ask for from a bank holiday? I'll personally be having a drink or two and enjoying the bands at Sweeps Festival this weekend. And whatever you're up to, I really hope you also have a wonderful May Day weekend.
Kent Online Sports.
Football, and it's going to be a pretty packed Priestfield tomorrow for Gillingham's final home game of the season. They welcome Newport County, who are just a place and a point above them in the League Two table. Firstly, let's hear from manager Neil Harris.
We're going to have a really good crowd for the last home game. That's because there's optimism and excitement around the future, and you know we look forward to it really. Nearly created a miracle last year by staying in the division from where we were. Didn't quite materialise this year. We've earned the right to stay in this division. Certainly, to January, we don't want to be in again moving forward for a long time as a football club. However, you know you are where you are in football majority of the time for a reason, and there is a completely different feel about the place now. You know, just every day is a real joy and a real buzz about the place, and certainly when you get to match day at Priestfield, you know, it's not just a coincidence that you pick up 28 points out of 33 over a course of a period. There's a reason for it, and it's because the fans come buoyant, excited, motivated, and proud, really, and then they see players play like it exactly the same, and they epitomise each other in the moment, and hopefully they see that in me on the sideline as well, you know, to the group, and we're just really enjoying it, and we want to continue that. We want to continue that to 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon.
It follows the Gills' 2-2 draw at promotion hopefuls Bradford City last weekend, and their last home game was that incredible 2-0 win over promoted Leyton Orient. Well, Che Alexander scored a penalty in that match, and that pretty much secured the Gills' League Two future. We've also been chatting to him.
The feeling was amazing. See, the Rainermen just went crazy, and we knew there and then that not only did we win the game, but we were safe, but we should have won that game, 3s and 4s, so it was always going to happen. Hopefully it'll be a full house here and we can go out and put in a great performance and finish the season off here in a good manner. I know what I can do on the pitch, I know my ability, and I come in and work hard every day, so I knew as soon as I get the chance, I'll take it. But as a team, you can see that the feeling around the campus is amazing. The results obviously do that. But yeah, it's a great feeling going out there knowing that we're going to put in a good performance and get the win and get 3 points. I think everyone's looking forward to next year. It'll be good to get a little break, rest the legs, and yeah, get back in and start. We've finished.
Kick-off tomorrow is at 3. If you're not going to be at the game, you will be able to follow the action at kentonline.co.uk. We'll also have reaction to the result in bulletins on our sister radio station, KMFM, on Sunday morning. And in cricket, Kent will be hoping to improve their batting on the second day of their county championship match against Middlesex. They struggled to build a decent score at Lord's yesterday and resumed on 113 for 6 in their first innings. You'll be able to catch up on the result with reaction to the day's play on the sports pages of Kent Online. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram and TikTok. You can also get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. And to sign up to that, you just need to head to kentonline.co.uk. Whilst you're on the site today, you can read the latest review from our secret drinker. Hope you have a fantastic long weekend. We'll be back with the podcast on Tuesday.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.